So happy to be with you and alive and out of my sick bed. Thank you so much for your patience while I got better. I had pneumonia for 10 days and my doctors took very good care of me. And now I'm just kind of getting rid of the last bits of it, really. So I probably sound a little nasally, but I'm hoping that that will shift. But yeah, man, it totally floored me. Totally floored me. And it might be fun to kind of explore some of the themes that have been coming up for me in our sessions. But because I think it's certainly from the feedback of stuff I've shared, this can bring up stuff, right? When we're going through illnesses and yeah, I think it may or may not be something that you want to explore. So let's just kind of get here. Let's check in while folks are joining in. So I just really encourage you to kind of sit with your feet flat on the floor. You may want to turn off devices in front of you. Whatever you need to kind of feel like you're present to yourself right now. And hey, Lorna, nice to see you. We're just checking in, you've missed nothing. So yeah, feet on the floor, just put your hands maybe in your lap. Feel free to close your eyes if that feels comfortable to you. And the idea is we're just going inside ourselves, however we're showing up today. Whether you're in perfect health and feeling well rested and quietly present, or if you've got other stuff that's going on, things that happened yesterday that are still with you, or last week, things that are happening this morning that are still with you, just notice what's here for you. And just notice that you can be with all of it. Nothing has to change for you to be present to yourself. Exactly as you are right now. Just notice any body sensations that are present with you. Might want to do a little scan of your body. Notice where you have tension or maybe flutters of energy. Notice if you attach any meaning to those sensations. Just be with them. Just notice them. Just notice you can be with yourself right now as you are. Nothing needs to change for you to have a moment of stillness with yourself. When you're ready, just come back to the room. Give your toes a little wiggle if that feels good. Nice to do that, right? We forget to do that. We forget we can just be with ourselves. All part of self-acceptance, right? Nothing and no one needs to change right now. No part of me needs to change right now. I can be with me. And it's just a practice, just like a gentle practice. You can try that when you're standing in the shower, when you're standing at the sink, waiting for the kettle to boil. Just have a moment. Feel your feet on the floor. What's here? What's here right now? Just that practice helped me to recognize that I actually had a body from here down years ago. I don't know about you. I spent a long part of my life trying to ignore that I had human emotions. They seemed very inconvenient to me. So just allowing them gently in that very compassionate way can be really life-changing. So here we are. I just wonder if anyone wants to say that they want some coaching today, if you want to put your name in the chat and then we'll make sure that we get to you. Please feel free to do that. It's really lovely to see more people arriving. So I just thought I would share a tiny bit. Nazarene, that's great. We'll get straight to you. And yeah, just put your name there so that we've got time for everyone. One of the things I just wanted to share with you is what I'm learning about, and partly I want to share this because I want you to really get, like, I've been doing this work for a freaking long time and I'm still uncovering layers, right? Like the idea that there is a there that we need to get to that's way better than here is a really common and I think quite understandable story that we tell ourselves. It's very much part of our culture. Right, get to the next place and then you'll be happy. So what I'm learning over the last few weeks of just being pretty unwell and quite dependent on, lovely to see Esther, no problem at all about being late. So I was really unwell. I was pretty dependent for pretty much all my needs. I could kind of wash myself. I had no energy at all. And I'm a pretty self-reliant cat. Like I don't like to be needy. And it was such a humbling experience to be present to my body. The fact that pneumonia literally takes your breath away. So I was present to most of my breaths for about 3 days. I was just noticing what was happening because you get fluid on your lungs and so your lungs are kind of crackling the whole time and making these involuntary noises. You can't sleep. It's very surreal. But what I learned in that process was we're kind of kidding ourselves if we think we're alone. Most of us, I suspect, I may be alone in this, but I'm pretty sure I'm not. We think that actually if we fell apart, no one would be there to catch us. And particularly, I think if you're, because we're women, and particularly if you're a parent and you're kind of at the heart of your family, I think that belief has some real merit, right? Like there's some real evidence there. Actually, if I fall apart, if I'm unwell, I'm not sure what might happen. And also just this idea that our bodies are so human and so humbling to really see, oh, sometimes there can be, yes, exactly what you're saying, Kate, some shame attached to, oh, mine's not working properly. Like I'm somehow not playing my part here. So there was all of that kind of shame and guilt. I think there's a layer of this around being self-employed because you just think, oh, I'm letting all of you down. Even though I knew you would be amazing and understanding, there was still that sense of letting people down. So there is this weird thing that happens when we get ill. And I think particularly when it's pretty, pretty crippling illness, when you're really just under it, that it can bring up a lot of stuff around your stories, around your body and your fallibility, all of that. And what I've learned is that actually some of my strengths have tipped into shadows. So my strength of being quite self-reliant and resilient, like one of the things that all the psychologists tells us resilience, freaking awesome quality to have. That's a real strength of mine. And it can tip over into a shadow where I'm actually too self-reliant. It took me a really long time to say, actually, I'm not well enough to get out of bed. And so your body has a way of kind of humbling you when that happens. But I think that's something that we've started to talk a little bit about. Sometimes the things that are our strengths, our values, can often create a little quite sneaky and sophisticated way for us to end up really not in our healthiest adult self, but it's wearing this kind of noble cloak of our values or our strengths or the things that we really identify with. So I'm actually finding that I'm starting to shift some of my really quite dearly held values, and my sense of identity has taken a little hit and is getting a little reshuffle as a result of being unwell. And I have to say, I think it's a good thing. Like, I think these shifts are good. They don't feel like I'm, it doesn't feel like I'm changing in a way that isn't growth. It feels like growth to me. So I just wanted to kind of put that out there, that sometimes our values, our strengths, the characteristics and parts of our identity that we really feel like, this is me. This, if I didn't have this, don't know who I would be. Maybe that's a role for you. Sometimes it can come up as a role. That actually, when you start to see that, oh, I can let some of that go, or I can bring in some more balance, you start to see that you are so much bigger, so much more resourced, which is really what this program is aiming to share, is really how you can resource yourself. But that doesn't mean, right, that we get so resourced that we don't need anybody. We actually need each other, which is why this is a group program and not individuals. So I just wanted to put that out there and kind of share that as a sort of thought for the day. See if that resonates, see if that is something you want to maybe talk a little bit about today or in future sessions. And yeah, just see how that lands for you. Does anyone want to share anything just from that intro? And then we'll get on to Nazarene. All good.
I'll just share one thing, because the most recent time I was ill, I kind of had this realization that actually me needing to do everything in self-reliant isn't really very good for anybody else, because I ended up having a really big row with my husband, who was just like, they said for the first time, really, it just makes me feel really shit when you don't trust me enough to take care of you. And I was just like, my mind was blown, because yeah, that people around you might think you're passing judgment on them by needing to do things. And so, I mean, obviously we should want to do it for ourselves, and not like, it then becomes another strand of people pleasing to be like, oh, but I need to make people feel valued. But yeah, that was, I'm the same, but I'm ill. And that felt like a breakthrough kind of conversation.
Love that, Kate. And that's the thing, isn't it? That it can be people pleasing and it can be connecting, right? Like, I think all of the things that we talk about that are characteristics of people pleasing, putting other people first, you know, sacrificing our own needs, allowing other people's needs or wants to be prioritized, that those are actually really amazing qualities that we need to be in families and in friendship groups and, you know, in community with each other. Like, it's when it gets out of balance, and that's the only thing we do, that it can start to, you know, ebb away at us. And I think that's what I'm learning too, Kate, is that it's actually like staying with the moment of, Is what is this? What is happening in this moment? And making a call there.
Yeah, and it's so difficult, because I mean, we've talked about this loads of times before, that kind of tendency to all or nothing thinking. So I think, oh, I do this, so now I'm going to have to do the opposite of it. When, so I'm doing some reading like on attachment theory at the moment, and sort of came to this like, oh, maybe I form attachments by being needed. And then that, or maybe what I'm doing is just pathologizing my like friendly helpfulness at some point, because it's not necessarily a problem that I want to help my friend do the washing up, Like, that is also a nice thing. I shouldn't be like, oh no, I don't want to be needed at all because I don't want to form attachments this way. So it's just finding that middle ground, which is so difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm so with you on not pathologizing our humanity. I do think there's a missing skit show of like what psychologists or coaches kind of say when they're in community with each other and that they're pathologizing everything. I think that would actually be really funny. But yeah, completely. And I think that's one of the things that we've got coming this week is an inspiration page on our learning site where you can post books and music and links to pages that you love. And one of the books I'm recommending on there is by Martha Beck. It's actually right next to me. It's called The Way of Integrity. You might know Martha because she's kind of known as Oprah's life coach. But I trained with her for a year, about a decade ago. And Martha talks about being in integrity with yourself. And when I read through this, I'm about halfway through it, I found that this is incredibly consistent with what we call the healthy adult self. So it's really about like understanding how to kind of bring this to life just in a new way. And it's in a book form. So sometimes that can be fun to read. And that helps, I think, Kate, with that idea of what is going on here? Like, is this a childhood pattern that I'm projecting out into the world? Or do I just want to help my mate do the dishes? You know, am I just being a kind person? That's something to definitely use as a resource. Okay, thanks so much, Kate. That was brilliant. Right, we are going to get to Nazreen. And I'm just checking in the chat here. Yeah, Lorna, I so get that. A tendency of working through stressful situations, then suffer with a migraine afterwards instead of processing my needs as they come up. Yeah. And, you know, I think that is so testament to your self-awareness that you can see yourself doing that. And it's the way that I really encourage people to work with those kinds of patterns is, I'm just gonna allow myself to notice. Like do the thing, like the check-in that we do. Okay, when I see that stressful situation come up, I'm going to make sure I have a moment where I can just check in and see what is actually happening here. See what I'm feeling. And maybe that means that the stressful situation takes a tiny bit longer to be resolved or to work through. But it means that you get those moments where you can kind of be with yourself through it. And yeah, how amazing that the breathing is much. Yeah. So it's amazing, I think, that our bodies are going to give us this feedback. Migraines, joint pain, stress, breath, all of anything that's kind of like these symptomatic to stress and to anxiety is great information to play with. I used to get really bad skin breakouts when I was drinking. And I'm sure it was all connected to my diet wasn't exactly vegetable friendly at the time. But when I stopped drinking and actually started feeling my feelings rather than numbing out from them, I found like I just don't have those breakouts. I'm sure my diet has played a part in that. But I actually think a lot of it was kind of stress and just sort of repressed and held on to. And it was like just coming out in pustules on my face. Like, yeah, there's your anger that you didn't feel. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it's kind of fun. Okay, lovely Nazreen, let's get going with you. What can I help you with today?
Well, I'll actually just share first about in terms of asking for help. I had a little epiphany at the beginning of 2021 that it's okay to ask for help and also that people want to help. They're happy to help. My husband had an accident and So we were coming off the, well, we were still in the pandemic, but he had basically not worked at all in 2020. We both have our own businesses. So, you know, I was the like sole breadwinner. He has and obviously I needed him to like help out on the home front. Mm-hmm. And he had an accident and he ended up being in hospital for 3 weeks. And we knew that he was going to be in hospital for a while when it happened. And I just was like, oh my God, how am I going to do everything? And like it took me a good like, you know, portion of the day to go, I am going to actually have to ask for help. Like, it's not possible for me to do it all by myself. And I realized I had all these limits on like who was it okay to ask for help? If I haven't really helped that person in some particular way, that I'm not allowed to ask them for help, like all that kind of stuff. And it was just, I had to just like throw that out the window because it was like, if I've got this extremely small group of people, like under three people I can ask for help, that's not going to cut it. I'm going to have to expand my who I can ask for help list. And I asked, you know, people who were like mums at school, who were not my friends, people that are acquaintances basically. But nobody that I would like call and chat on the phone with or anything to help with like school pickup or drop off and stuff like that. And it was like nothing bad happened. People wanted to help me. And I don't feel like I owe them something and I have to like, oh my God, now I have to wait for her husband to have an accident so I can make it back up. It's just not really how it works. Yeah. So I'm much more. I don't feel as guilty about asking for help anymore since that happened.
I'm curious to know what you think the guilt is about.
Well, that self-reliance thing. Like I suppose it's, you know, my identity as well as, okay, I'm completely autonomous. I can do everything by myself. I don't have to. And I think a little bit about admitting that you need help.
Yeah.
And there is also a cultural thing here. So I'm Australian. I live in Italy, well, particularly in Sardinia. And my husband is also, he's very much like, he doesn't want to ask anyone for help.
Right.
Unless he knows he's helped that person. Like it's very much a reciprocal thing. Okay. And if someone has helped me, I have to like either give them a present or I have to like do something to like,
yeah,
you know, show my appreciation or whatever. And I noticed when we lived in Australia, he was very much like, we had people over a lot and I just really liked having people over and just going, hang on a second, like everyone always just comes over to our house and they're not inviting us. And I was like, well, I don't really care. I want them to be here. Like I have no problem with being on that side. And he was kind of like, hang on, this isn't reciprocal enough for me. Right. Like it has to be like completely.
Yeah.
And when I'm on the side of being the person who gives more, that's okay. I was like, yeah. I can't be in like help debt or nice thing debt or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. I realized that.
That's such a fascinating connection, isn't it? The guilt of I'm asking for too much and I'm not giving enough.
Mm.
Yeah.
Since 2021, beginning of 2021 when that happened, I've really changed about that. I'm just like, I can just ask. If they don't want to do it, they just say no.
Because you've got evidence.
I'm, you know, intuitive enough to be able to tell that someone's going, okay, and don't really want to, and then I can, you know,
yeah,
accordingly. So
cool.
Yeah.
It sounds like a really, like a real shift just in terms of letting go of that identity of being the woman who has everything. I think it's a total myth. It's usually the woman who does everything.
Mm-hmm.
She's knackered, actually. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Really cool. I'm curious, was that what you wanted to ask for help on, or was that just a share around this topic?
That was just a share, okay. But it is related because we're not kind of related. Guilt is a theme.
Okay, cool.
Because I was wondering whether we were going to have the call today, and then I was like, when I saw the email, I was like, maybe should I ask about this? Because this is something that just came up yesterday, really.
Cool.
I had a realization of how long I've been working towards this goal of mine to have an alternative source, an alternative stream of income to earn more without, working myself to the bone and to just get a little bit out of the box of, okay, I'm doing this and this is what it's going to look like for the next 20 years or whatever. And I was just like, oh my God. And through some work I was doing, I was like, oh my God, in 2019, I was working on this.
Right.
And I've gone through and I've gone down various rabbit holes and here I am, I'm still here. And that kind of oh my God, if I'd just gotten on top of things in 2019,
right,
I'd be so much further ahead, or this wouldn't even be an issue anymore. And I know that there's all the you have to go through all of that to be able to love enough. But, I just had this real pang of guilt of time and money wasted, really.
Right.
And that has been something that has come up in the past. I was like, oh, how can I really let go of that without just saying, oh, that's okay. I've kind of I've faced this a few times in the past.
Yeah.
But I've never I don't feel like I'm actually sort of over it. Maybe I made some wrong decisions. I pursued this and it wasn't the right thing. And I can sort of logically say to myself, and that's okay. But it's obviously not, because I'm still
And do you think I'm curious to know if the "I've got to let this go" is another way that you're holding back from finishing this. Are you waiting to be able to let it go and get okay with it before you can finish?
Let go with how it's panned out in the past.
Yeah. Kind of make your peace with the process of getting to here before you is there a sense, I really need to make my peace with this before I can just complete this course and get it in the world?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
It's just this annoying kind of thing that I'm carrying around.
Right.
I don't feel like I need to, I can't do anything until I've sorted that out.
Right.
But, it's just I've still got it. Here it is still over my shoulder.
So you've got this, it's almost like I'm picturing you with a sort of bag of guilt and regret.
Mm.
Yeah. So it's a kind of magical thinking, isn't it? Well, I just want to get rid of that, make my peace with it, let go of it. Maybe you won't.
Mm.
So why not keep it as small as it is and take it with you? It's like, oh, yeah, that's just on my backpack. Okay, yeah, got some regrets. And it feels like, I know for a lot of people that have, and I've worked with lots of people in the past where, there's a few people in the chat saying, really relatable. The time is running out feeling, I've waited too long. All of that kind of storytelling, it's like then we use that as a way of almost punishing ourselves rather than going, yes, I have regrets. I wish I'd done things different. I wish I knew now when I started. I wish I knew what I know now. But that's magical thinking, because you just can't go back in time. But what you can do is decide to finish it. to do the thing, right? There is this annoying parable, you know, the ones where you're like, no thanks, that's really helpful, I think it comes from China, and it's like the best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago and the next best time is today. Yeah. Which I think speaks to that feeling, right? I wish I'd planted the magnolia. Imagine what it would look like now. And it's like, well, you can imagine that, or you can just plant it today and decide, all right, well, in a few years, I will be so proud of me.
Mm. Yeah, I don't feel like time is running out.
Right.
Okay, this is totally doable. I can still, and actually I've been feeling like, okay, I've got this moment. It's actually happening this year. It's the first time I've gone, okay, yeah, like for real. It's not just like that'd be nice, or let's hope, or whatever. It's like, I feel like it's really going to happen this year.
Yeah.
So I think it's just that sort of, I suppose kicking myself for faffing around
Well, and I guess that's the thing, isn't it? Like, I sometimes I think for me, like when I think about compassion, self-compassion is pretty robust. Like, it's not coddling, it's saying, okay, I do not want to feel like this time next year.
Mm.
What am I going to do now to really take care of myself and take care of this piece of work or this project or whatever it is, so that next year me is super proud of me?
Mm.
And it's a way of just kind of like flipping this. So you don't need to worry too much about what's already gone. It's like, yep, that's happened. I'm just going to be with that. And yep, there can be some regrets and some frustration and wishes that things were different, but they're not. So I'm going to be with the reality and let that fuel me, so that in the future when I'm looking back, I'm really proud of what I've done.
Mm. Yeah. So I can, like as you said, go, well, and it finally happened.
Yeah.
And I finally did it. All of that happened. And now I did what I wanted to do.
And the thing I think is that we can't even know what the result's going to be when we create something. We don't really know what's going to happen. So sometimes it can be seductive to get into that magical thinking of, well, if it was different, or if I'd made that choice and what have you. And I know for myself, that can sometimes be a way of me trying to control the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of not our job. The job is to create the thing and share the thing and invite people to play with the thing. And we see what happens.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that kind of helps you, Nazreen, just to think about shifting your focus instead of from the past to the future, and what you can do now to make your future self proud of you.
Yeah. Mm. But can't you just take the sack away?
Sure.
Okay, I'll keep carrying it around.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, it's true that it's, yeah. Yes.
And you don't want to add one more year to it, you know?
No, exactly. I don't want it to get any heavier.
No. And I think it's a great metaphor, because it's so kind of visceral, right? That sack of regret on your back. Like, whenever you feel yourself kind of procrastinating, or, you know, getting into that place where you're like, oh, I could create a nice chunky delay here. Or, you know, I could possibly do
whatever.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, all I'm doing is just adding to my bag of regret. I promised myself I wouldn't do that.
Mm. Yeah.
So it can actually be a real source of progress for you.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Yes, that is helpful.
Okay.
And I'm glad I brought it up, even though it was just like, oh, I'll just.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's the thing, right? And that's one of the reasons why I think these sessions that can be really helpful is that it's like real time. What's coming up real time? Because we often go to like the biggest, baddest part of our world, right? And it's like that's the thing that gets the focus. And sometimes I think actually when you have a disagreement with a neighbor and it happened 5 minutes before the call, that's the perfect time to go, oh my goodness, actually I could look at this differently. And that changes something that's connected to the bigger thing, right? But it's the live thing that is, you know, looking for attention.
Yeah.
Enjoy your bag of regret. Make it nice small.
Enjoying it might be a bit hard, but
yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nazreen. Okay, anyone else got anything they want to talk about today? Anything at all? Big, small, in between? I am super excited to also hear about like wins, something you've gone, oh, I didn't do that. And I usually do that. And I'm so proud of myself. Tiny moments of celebration. What have you been doing from your healthy adult self that you feel good about? That is also so worthy of our time and attention. Hey, Livette. I'm going to come to Livette and then we'll come back to you, Kate. Cool.
I don't want to take a lot of time for this because it's a big story, but my mom, who has not been to my home in about 9 years, complicated family relationships. I don't have a lot of family. She's never spent time with my kids, but my dad passed away last summer and he was the most volatile family member. So we're trying a new thing. And I'm very proud of myself that in preparation for her to be coming tomorrow, I had a series of a couple of difficult conversations with her where I really very lovingly pushed back from my healthy adult self. And I kind of did lots of journaling, lots of venting with friends, a little talking with my therapist as well. And when I had these conversations with her, they felt like jazz, you know, jazz music that just kind of riffs and you feel around and you're feeling around and you're staying healthy and grounded, but you're not saying the perfect thing. You're not worried about what they're going to do or not do. You're just staying with, you know, you're an adult at liberty to react certain ways. And this is who I am. And this is what's required to come into our bubble. And it was, I was just really proud of myself. That took years of work upon work and doesn't mean anything's going to turn out any particular way, but I know where I'm standing and I'll keep standing in my healthy adult self and wish me luck because she'll be here 2 weeks.
2 weeks after 9 years, crikey. Mm. I'm so proud of you. That's freaking awesome. Mums, man. Yep. I hear you. I have one question for you, Livette, just to kind of ground this a little bit more. How do you think this is different from maybe how you would have responded in the past?
Yeah, a big push forward happened for me. As I've taken this course this fall and done a lot of work on my self-worth. And because some of the main points I needed to push back were not letting it not go unsaid when she was making me less than. And so just knowing my worth, and I said, wait a minute, if you're not celebrating me in this way, we're not going to connect deeply. Okay. So yeah, there was something big about me really just truly believing No, people that are close to me recognize me, celebrate me in different ways. And if you want to come close and you don't do that, we're going to stay over here for a while.
I really hear that. And it's such a beautiful example for all of us, but especially for you, Libby, that you get to set your boundaries. And you've done this absolutely the way I recommend, which is it's not an ultimatum. It's not trying to get the other person to do something. It's saying, here's where I stand, and you're welcome to respond to that in whichever way you feel you want to. But this won't be changing. And that is, it is so, I love the description of a conversation that's like jazz. Yeah. Yeah. That it is. It's sometimes, I think, for folks in our lives who know us to be really super accommodating or really adversarial, when we take this very healthy stance and just say, I hear you, this is where I'm at, and you're welcome to respond to that in whatever way feels better, this won't be changing. They can kind of go, what the hell is happening? I don't know who you are. I don't know who I am. I'm feeling things. Sometimes those feelings get projected back onto us. But the freedom that you're describing, I'm worthy of this, is priceless. So bravo! Bloody brilliant. Yeah. So cool. So cool. What a fantastic, fantastic one. Thank you for sharing. That's mega. Really, really cool. Love it. Kate, let's come to you.
Yeah, I mean, I was gonna say something quite small as a kind of just step in to fill the silence thing, but Levette has got me now thinking about my parents, so maybe I'll say something about that. Because my parents came to visit us for the first time in 4 years, a couple of weekends ago. They'd never come to this, you know. I bought my first property, was really excited to share it with them, and they just, I mean, part of this was the pandemic, but also they just like wouldn't come and visit. And I've never gotten to the bottom of why, because like I asked them and they just deflect. And this is very typical of the relationship with my parents. I'm just really confused by something. And there's just not like a family culture of kind of being vulnerable or having honest conversations. But anyway, yeah, they came because they were going on holiday, and we were quite near the airport that they wanted to go from. So it forced them to like overcome their reluctance of coming to London, which I think is a big thing about it. They're countryside people, and it's intimidating and it's like scary. That was one of the things that I noticed, actually. So my kind of win hasn't been like changing the relationship, but just noticing how they make me feel. Which was kind of like on edge before they got here, doing the like typical thing of making sure everything's super clean. Because my mum is definitely one of those people who judges people, like based on how clean and tidy their house is, which is not a value of mine. So that's interesting in itself that I'm like her voice. So they just like didn't plan their journey at all. And I told them like, look on TFL, see what, but no, they were like, oh no, we know how to use Google Maps, Kate. Like, don't need any advice. Arrived into Paddington, the tube line they were going to take was closed. The next one was closed because, as I tried to tell them, engineering works happened. And so it kind of took them 2 hours to get from the train station to my flat. But like the whole time I was getting like frantic texts sort of every 10 minutes. And I was having to like counsel them through it. And it's not like they even needed advice. It was just like that realization that a lot of my interaction with them is about soothing their anxiety about something. And that like, oh, but I think I did that quite a lot as a kid as well. You know, they were worried about my sister, and I somehow was like, perhaps oldest children do this, just like trying to make them feel okay. So yeah, that was interesting to notice, and interesting of like, oh, maybe this is why I don't go and visit as much as I should, or perhaps would want to either, because it just suddenly feels like four and my shoulders go up and I feel kind of panicky and like I have to make things okay.
Yes.
So yeah, it was kind of interesting to notice.
It's fascinating. And you're so right about oldest children taking on the parent role when the parent can't take care of themselves. That's super, super common. And I'm wondering if that's what might have led you to look at attachment theory.
Yeah, I mean, a little bit. Like a few things really.
Yeah.
Within relationships, but also, yeah, I kind of coming to the, well, it wasn't me, like it was, I had therapy about a year ago.
Sure.
About something else, and I was just talking about the decision, like that I probably didn't want to have children, and the therapist just was like, oh yeah, that's really common amongst children who like parented their parents, they then don't want to take into a care. And I was like, did I parent my parents? Is that what you do? She was like, it seems obvious to me. And I'd never really considered that. And it made me feel guilty to kind of, because I'm like, I don't think they didn't do a good job, but there's just lots of feelings there.
Yeah.
I think. Cool. And I think I can sort of see how, just because my sister was chronically ill and like needed a lot of help and was kind of in and out of hospital. So I was just kind of the easy child, right? Who like got a lot of praise for like not being a problem and, you know, well, that they handled something else. So yeah, I could just feel myself getting emotional about this, so it's obviously a raw nerve. So maybe I'm ready to start thinking about this, because there's obviously like something a little bit dysfunctional, because they go and visit my sister all the time and I just don't have that relationship with them.
Yeah.
And maybe that's fine, but then maybe I would like something else. So
I'm struck just by it sounds like we're playing around the edges of what it is you want your relationship with your parents to be, and that might take some time to kind of develop for you, and it may be that for you to really think about what that looks like, there might need to be some repair, even if that's just for you, around the current relationship and what that looks like. And all I would offer, Kate, is, you know, there's no rush to fix it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's true.
And it's not your responsibility to take on what they may or may not be able to offer. So all I would offer is it could be sort of interesting for you to spend some time exploring, you know, what is our dynamic. There is a theoretical framework, super simple, but you might want to have a look at this, because I'm sort of sensing I'm sensing this dynamic, and this was so helpful for me. And it's a guy, I'll write the name down because it's a bit, it's this Cartman's drama triangle. Cartman's drama triangle. That's worth a Google. And what it shows us is how in most relationships, Cartman believed that we took on one of three roles. We were either the rescuer, the victim, or the persecutor, right? And so what it sounds like is happening here is that, and when people play, we most of us have a specific role that we like to play in relationships. It's all about getting our needs met. And we will be activated to take on a particular role when someone else takes that role, and they're all unconscious, right? So so the thing about when someone goes into kind of victim mode, which it sounds like your parents might have done with you, Kate, it's very natural to go into rescuer, right? And to be the one that rescues them. Sometimes we go into persecutor mode and we're like, oh, for God's sake, pull yourself together, or variations of, right? But when we're little and we want to preserve the relationship and we just want to get pats on the head for, you know, for being good, then it's totally natural to go into that rescuer mode. So it's just a really interesting dynamic to be aware of. And it can really help, particularly around those parent-child relationships, just to kind of go, oh, that's what was happening. And so when we are around people that take on different sort of roles, we can kind of fall into other dynamics as well. The good news is that there is a flip side to the triangle where you take on more health, much healthier roles. But that might just be an interesting one to have a look at as you're in exploration mode with attachment theory. Then, yeah, Cartman's drama triangle is something to have a look at.
Yeah, thanks.
Awesome. Yeah, Esther, shares around family dynamics. And the job of what's called the parentified child, right? Where you are you're the child that takes on the parent role. Yeah. Knackering. And, you know, one of the things that I think is so helpful about these kinds of dynamics and just getting sort of underneath them is you start to see, oh, that's why I do that. That explains why I did that thing when that didn't feel right to me, or that felt a little weird to me. Yes, Lorna, that's the way through a lot of the stuff, particularly around the parent-child relationship with your own parents, is that you start to see, oh, I've got a parent myself, as Lorna's saying, I've got to be my own mum. Now, I've got to speak to myself in the way that I wish my kind of idealized parent would speak to me. It is absolutely something I was thinking about in coming up with this idea of the healthy adult self. You know, that part of us is always deeply compassionate. It is like a very loving, ideal parent that celebrates us and encourages us and wants the only good things to happen. And it's totally there when it all falls apart and is, you know, the shitty times too. So, yeah. What a glorious conversation for a Wednesday morning. Yeah, so fun. Yes, allows us to have feelings. You don't have to be okay. I think that's part of this aspect of self-acceptance that I've always kind of struggled with, even though I knew it was such an important part of the healthy adult self, is you can have needs and you can have emotions and nothing has to be okay, and you are still utterly worthy of your own attention. You can still ask for what you need and you can still take care of you. And every now and then you have these amazing experiences like Livette shared with us, where you're like, holy shit, I am the parent. I am the grown up in this relationship and I'm freaking doing it. And it's good. It's not, you know, it's not like a grumpy parent. It's totally jazz parents. Yeah, really cool. Love it, Livette. So fun. Okay, everyone, we are coming up to the hour. So let's check out. One of the things I'd love you to do is share in the chat what's something you are going to do to take care of yourself this week? What feels like a nice thing to do for yourself this week? Might be to have an early night, might be to do something for yourself. Yeah. Oh, Livette, can I quote you on that? Not use your name. It is the best. Yeah.
You can use my name. I'm getting shameless these days. I don't know.
It's beautiful. Love it. Don't make me laugh. It makes me cough. Okay. So what's one thing you are going to do for yourself this week? Okay. I'm making playlists for different nervous system states. Esther, that sounds fantastic. Nazarene's going hiking with a girlfriend on Saturday for the first time all year. Amazing. Amazing. Physical stretching, love it. Yep, really cool. Keeping Saturday free just to work on my own project. Sewing, amazing. I'm going to see some exhibitions I've been wanting to go to for a long time. Always, that sounds amazing. Yeah, beautiful. I'm taking my two best friends to Glastonbury on Saturday for lunch and a crystal shopping, and we're going to go to the White Spring, which is this really groovy, kind of quite magical place. Full of, it's like underneath the tour, the Glastonbury tour, there's this cave, and it's taken care of by these well maidens, like actual women that take care of the well. And there is a natural spring there. So good. So good. Laying, I love this. Thank you all for sharing. Lots of this is so much resonance to things going on. Mum recently diagnosed with a long-term degenerative condition, working with my sisters all from afar to support each other in the complex relationships and different attitudes to receiving help. Yeah. Oh, love. Yeah. It's that time of life, isn't it, where our parents just need us in different ways. Yeah we are. I'm thinking of you. We're heading back to New Zealand to spend some time with my mother-in-law, who is in the same spot. So I totally feel that. It's tough. Yeah, but I love that dance workouts with your seven-year-olds. Yeah, it's a beautiful way to support yourself, just to have that moment of joy in amongst all the other human stuff that's going on. Yeah. Lorna, I love this. I told a friend I love swimming. She asked why I don't swim now. I stopped in my tracks. Why don't you swim now? Yes, Lorna, you could go swimming this weekend. Amazing. Amazing. So fun. It is incredible what we will do to avoid joy. Well, Laying, we are all thinking of you, and everyone who's having a tough week. Our hearts are with you. Know that you're not alone. You've got a spot here whenever you need some support or just to chat stuff through. And really excited to see you next week after all these fun activities to take care of yourselves. What a cool, cool thing. Lorna, we'd love to see a photo of you swimming. Or just the place you swim. Amazing. Yeah. Right. Sending all the love to you. Take care of yourselves. It's so fun to meet with you each week. I can't wait to see you again. I'm already missing you. Is that weird? That might be my attachment style. I'll be talking to Kate about that. All right, loves. Take care of yourselves. I'll see you soon. Bye. Bye.